nasty. Dread.
Good evening and welcome to Radio Alchemy, where we fuse the fringe with conventional wisdom. From secret societies to extraterrestrials, out-of-body experiences to this new world of disorder, we want you to join us each week as we look at this thing called life with all the pieces. And on tonight's show, in this first hour, you know what, there are just so many fantastic people in this globe, and one of them I keep bringing back because he is so right on in so many different things, and his name is Sherman Skolnick. And guess what? He just happened to write a book back in the 1970s called The Secret History of Airplane Sabotage. He joins us tonight to reflect upon the tragic crash of Senator Paul Wellstone and to tell us about some of the shenanigans of how these mysterious happenings keep happening. And in the second hour, let's see, who does Minister Farrakhan, Reverend Jerry Falwell, and Pat Robertson have in common? Well, it's the Moonies, actually, Sun Young Moon. And it's going to be interesting for you to find out how and why the Moonies are coming to a preacher near you. That's coming up in the second hour with Harley Schlanger from the Executive Intelligence Review. So, without further ado, stay tuned for Sherman Skolnick. And this is KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. So, the news tipped very quickly off on October 25th to report that Senator Paul Wellstone had died in a plane crash. He was accompanied to his death, unfortunately, by his wife Sheila, daughter Marcia, three campaign staff members, and the two pilots on the 11-seat King Air A100, a small chartered plane that was taking him, unfortunately, to a funeral of the father of a state lawmaker. The airplane went down near the airport runway, the Eveleth, Virginia Municipal Airport, which is 175 miles north of Minneapolis. And as you see now in this post-crash investigation that now the Senate is completely, Senate and House and Congress are completely controlled by the Republican Party. And it's very similar to 2 years ago when Missouri Governor Mel Carnahan was killed in a plane crash 3 weeks before the election day. Senator Paul Wellstone's plane went down only 11 days before the very important midterm elections. He was one of the hotly contested seats in this midterm election for control of the Senate. This raises quite a lot of air within the communities that look for irregularities, such as voting irregularities and other accidents that happen before very tenuous times in the United States. To get a sense of what this plane crash meant and that there have been so many others, we go to one of my favorite researchers, Sherman Skolnick. He happened to write back in the 1970s a book, which you probably haven't seen because it has been taken off the shelves, called The Secret History of Airplane Sabotage. It has not been published, but he has put excerpts from it on his website, SkolnicksReport.com. It is always fantastic to have Sherman Skolnick on Radio Alchemy, and I thank you so much for joining us, Sherman.
I'm honored to be back on your program, Evan. For those that are going to be online while we're talking about this, my website is www.SkolnicksReport.com, SkolnicksReport, SkolnicksReport.com. I've got about 150 stories there. You got to scroll down a ways to find it. Some people don't go that far down my website and they miss it. A little background for those that may not have heard me on the several times I've had the honor of being on this program in the past. And what I'm about to say is not by way of trying to puff ourselves up. We're not a one-man band. I've been at this as a court reformer since 1958. Since '63, I've been the founder and chairman of a public interest group. We call ourselves the Citizens Committee to Clean Up the Courts. I'm the chairman and founder. We investigate certain instances of judicial bribery, political murder, and we've developed, as we hope to discuss here briefly, a certain expertise in airplane sabotage. Why we developed that expertise, I'll get into if those will stay, if people will stay tuned and listen. In 1969, by the way, our work touched off the biggest judicial bribery scandal in American history. It's now the subject of a major book called Illinois Justice by Kenneth Manister. And I understand you could see portions of the book samples online from Amazon.com, Illinois Justice.
Yes.
In the 70s, our work led to the highest level sitting federal appeals judge to go to jail for bribery in the history of the United States. He held a press conference for all the local press in my hometown of Chicago. He called me a liar, but get this. He was prosecuted for bribery, as I publicly accused him, and he died an ex-convict. So that tells you, in the fewest number of words, where we come into the picture. From 83 to 93, our work touched off a series of scandals by which 20 judges and 40 lawyers were sent to jail for bribery. So we're not trying to puff ourselves up or anything, but it gives you an idea that we're, with over 40 years of experience of our group, we're not inclined to make idle statements.
Very good.
Now, in 1972, let me set the stage for this. There were two events of sabotaged airplane crashes, one of which we interviewed the investigators of it, and the other one, we investigated it ourselves because it happened in Chicago. Now, if there are some younger people listening that were born after that time, a month before Richard Nixon was reelected president, an outspoken critic who had been on the Warren Commission, Congressman Hale Boggs of Louisiana, disappeared in a plane crash in Alaska, and the press falsely stated that the plane was never found. It was found, but the CIA and military intelligence covered it up. It's a story all by itself. His daughter, Cokie Roberts, by going along, in my viewpoint, with the cover-up, was given a high-level job in more recent years now as the Sunday morning co-host of the ABC TV network political commentary program.
Like, it's either Meet the Press or...
No, not Meet the Press, but
it
was on Sunday morning. It's been taken over now by George Stephanopoulos, but for several years she was the co-host with... another fellow on the Sunday morning ABC TV program.
Right.
She also stated, and I believe it she knew better, that her late father, as a member of the Warren Commission, said that a lone assassin killed President Kennedy, and that she was satisfied with that. Her late father, well, I don't know if he's a late father, he may have survived that crash, they covered it up, but anyways, is her disappeared father. Had misgivings and began grumbling that the Warren Commission findings that a lone assassin killed President Kennedy was not correct, that it was a high-level plot. All right. We interviewed some of the investigators from Alaska who said the plane was found, but the CIA and the military intelligence covered up. Just about exactly 30 days after Tricky Dick was reelected in 72, there was a United Airlines plane that took off from Washington, and it had on board something really odd. It had 12 Watergate figures, some of whom were in the business of blackmailing Nixon regarding certain things that Nixon was involved with. As time permits, I'll go into that in more length, but Nixon was involved in the planning leading up to the assassination of President Kennedy in November 22nd, 1963. And Mrs. E. Howard Hunt and her husband, were in a position. They have a tremendous amount of knowledge, and she was carrying $2 million of money orders and cashier's checks traceable to the Nixon White House, payoff bribery money. She was blackmailing, but she was the courier taking away the blackmail money that they had received from Tricky Dick.
Now, how did they come across the documents? How did the Hunts come across the documents that linked the CIA, like the American Gestapo, as you call it, the FBI, CIA, and Nixon to the planning and carrying out of the JFK assassination?
Let's see if I have a simple way. Some of that is discussed in a book that came out in Europe in 14 languages called Farewell America.
Hmm.
Was written by the French CIA under a pen name, James Hepburn. Was not allowed to be sold by bookstores in the United States. The only ones that were able to get copies into the United States were two assassination researchers, me and a friend of mine, Penn Jones, from Midlothian, Texas, a Dallas suburb. In the 70s, I traveled around the country giving lectures to students, and I used to give away copies of the book in return for small donations to support our work. But what's odd is, after all these years of not allowing the book to be sold in the United States, the only way you could get a copy of the book after we ran out of the few copies that we were able to bring into the country was if you paid $100 to some bookstores, they would find one under the table someplace and sell it to you. But get this, in October of 2002, all of a sudden, Amazon.com, the online bookseller, announced that they were bringing out Farewell America, the true story of who was involved with the assassination of President Kennedy. They were bringing it out in paperback for $12.95. I mean, considering that 6 months previous, somebody I know paid $100 for a copy, and they now got it in paperback, but the other booksellers don't want to do it. Now, coming back to the issue here, airplane sabotage. Since we call it the Watergate plane, a United Airlines flight.
Yeah.
At the time, United Airlines, major stockholder, their holding company, UAL Incorporated. The largest stockholder was the Rockefeller family, okay?
Yes.
And now get this plane had 12 Watergate figures, including Mrs. E. Howard Hunt, wife of the Watergate burglar. The plane was misdirected through turning off a radio beacon. As time permits, I'm going to discuss how this radio beacon idea comes into the play with several sabotaged plane crashes, including the one you started to talk about, Senator Paul Wellstone. Because, you see, if you put up a fake or purposely tampered with radio beacon, you could steer a plane not into the runway, but into a hill, into a pancake landing. You could crash the plane.
Yes.
You say, all right, and that is what happened with the Watergate plane. The plane was surrounded by the FBI, which arrived sooner than the local police and fire department that responded within 2 minutes. Now, the FBI headquarters in Chicago is 12 miles away. So even if they got into a helicopter on the top of their headquarters building, how the heck could they have made that 12 miles when the police were ready to go into the scene within 2 minutes? The answer to that is the FBI was waiting to arrest Mrs. Hunt and the others for this blackmail thing. They were waiting near Midway Airport, Chicago, so they didn't have to come from their downtown headquarters to the vicinity of the aircraft. They were right near the airport to arrest her anyway.
Does that mean that they didn't know about the sabotage then?
Oh, they were a part of it. We've got a letter from the acting director of the FBI at that time stating that they were that they had a right to be there because they were pursuing an investigation of air piracy.
Right.
Which they did not bother to describe. Did somebody try to take over the plane in route? Did somebody... She was so worried about her suitcase with the $2 million in valuables, she bought an extra seat as shown by certain documents to keep her suitcase on a seat right next to her in first class. That's Mrs. Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
She survived the crash, and she and some of the Watergators were actually murdered on the ground. Their bodies had more cyanide in it than she could have gotten by breathing in from anything that was burning in the plane. The plane didn't crash. It pancaked, and some 40 people died, including, since it pancaked near the airport, it landed on a couple of houses. The interesting thing is that the only one in the world that did a accurate documentary on it was Swedish National TV. And guess who was the volunteer consultant to their film documentary?
Was it you?
And I was photographed sitting in my wheelchair near the house that was demolished when this plane fell on it. They showed it with me in English with Swedish subtitles.
Sure.
In Sweden.
Sure.
But the media here said it was an accident. We brought a lawsuit to reopen the hearings of the National Transportation Safety Board. We said there was a political cover-up. And in the meantime, while our lawsuit was pending, we had found a way to liberate the government's entire suppressed file. 1,300 pages of documents and pictures showing foul play. When they opened up the safety board hearing, as a result of our lawsuit, they reopened it. I challenged them to arrest me for having their whole unreleased file. I said, look, in front of all this press, you can arrest me. The Tribune, part of the liars and whores in the press, I guess, ran a picture of me sitting at a table with all these documents, but guess what? They took a scissors and cut off the part showing the documents, and they showed only me from the waist up. Skolnick has no proof whatever. An absolute blatant lie. I was sitting at a table with all the documents laid out on this table in front of the safety board. They came up with a thing that there was pilot error, and there's an awful lot to be said there. It was covered up. And there's a four-part series on my website called The Secret History of Airplane Sabotage.
Now,
let me make a bigger description of the subject.
Okay.
Who was it that developed an expertise in murdering opponents with sabotaged airplanes? Adolf Hitler. I'm sure that name rings a bell with everybody, including very young people. I think they all know who he was.
Okay.
But that has been the thing there. Now, the airlines don't like the subject.
Yeah, I don't think they do.
In 73, I wrote a book, The Secret History of Airplane Sabotage. A major publisher was in the printing cycle, printing it, and the Rockefeller banking interests threatened the publisher and the book printing. The printing was stopped in the middle of the print cycle. And, of course, no copies of the book were available. But we developed a volunteer consultants. We're a not-for-profit group. We developed aviation consultants around the world. And as a result of investigating the Watergate plane crash, we developed a great deal of expertise on airplane sabotage.
Yes.
So now let me open up the thing to a broader spectrum of discussion. But I thought I'd go into that. That was December 8th, 1972, the Watergate plane crash.
Yes.
By the way, a stewardess of United Airlines stood up at a corporate meeting. She knew about the documents, and she confronted the board of directors of United Airlines, and they had security force her to sit back in her seat, and they fired her from her job and blackmailed her throughout the aviation history.
Well, it seems that you were up against a major wall, because not only did the Rockefellers have a controlling interest in the parent company of UAL, but they also had a major controlling interest of ABC, NBC, and CBS News.
Yeah, right. At that time in the 70s, The Rockefeller interests owned all three new news networks. I confronted an FCC rare meeting of the FCC in Chicago with that, and they threatened to arrest me. So I've been around the track, you know.
Before we jump off of this Watergate flight, could you talk a little bit about the link of the cyanide and Harold Metcalf?
There are so many details there that are listed on our website. We're going to run out of time and not go into the broader picture.
Okay, but if you could just talk about Harold Metcalf, because he survived the flight.
There were toxicological reports showing cyanide in the bodies of the Watergate people and not the others on the plane. And we showed those reports to independent pathologists who said there isn't a chance in the world that these people could have breathed in cyanide from anything burning on the plane, that this is cyanide that had to be injected. Hmm. We brought it to some of the leading experts, pathologists in the United States. So we you know. There's a lot to be said. One of the survivors of the crash was in a jumpsuit. He came out the rear door of the plane.
That was Harold Metcalf.
Right. And he was a covert operator of a secret elite federal force, and we interviewed him, and he blurted out to one of our staff, it wasn't supposed to, and he turned almost purple, and so on.
Well, you're alluding to the fact that the plane wasn't supposed to crash. He possibly was going to do the hit all using cyanide, but the plane went down, which means that somebody was possibly going to cut him out.
Right, right. But the point is, what they did is they turned off the radio beacon. The radio beacon guiding in planes to Midway Airport was turned off only when this plane approached, and he went back on the air with it the minute this plane pancaked. So it wasn't an accident. It was intentional.
Okay.
All the intentional circumstances and the fraud by the National... Look, we asked the National Transportation Safety Board to disqualify themselves. Why? They and their family were all heavily stockholders in the airline industry, which has an interest that there never, never, never be any public discussion on the monopoly press about airplane sabotage. They claim that that discussion upsets people, interferes with the sale of airline tickets, and so on. And so you can see why the Rockefeller interest interfered with the publication of my book.
Now, what about that small red plane that flew right in front of...
We're going to spend the whole hour discussing this, and we're not going to get to the other details.
Well, no, we're good into it, if you would just give us a little bit of information.
There was another airplane in front of it that we did a lot of investigation about that, and they did overkill. They dropped some aluminum chaff, which interferes with the electronic signals. So there was overkill in so many, and an insider called us from Midway Airport Tower and says, "I can only talk to you for 1 minute, Mr. Skolnick, and then I'm going to hang up. Dorothy Hunt and those people were murdered. Please, please investigate what happened. It happened right in this building together with some other things that he mentioned," and then he hung up. And that got us started.
Okay.
And of course, when we liberated the entire file and started into the whole thing, we developed an expertise in airplane sabotage. But now let me go into the bigger picture now.
Okay.
Each one of these things, I could take a whole hour just to discuss each of these examples. In 1976, Congressman Jerry Litton of Missouri was running for U.S. Senate, a Democrat. His opponent was Congressman John Danforth. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Heir to the Ralston Purina fortune of Missouri, St. Louis, Missouri, animal feed and pet food.
Right.
He died in a strange plane crash, and Danforth ran against the guy that, and he died right after he was nominated by the Democrat convention, by the Democrats. And that's where he died. A fellow that you've had on your program, I'm sure, Mike Rupert,
mm-hmm.
his website is topz, ZCIA.com. He criticized the CIA quite a bit. And he did a statistical study from a website called politicalgraveyard.com. And from that, he could prove that a number of Democrats, not Republicans, died in plane crashes right before elections. Isn't that odd?
Well, yeah, the Political Graveyard is a very deep website, and you can go down to airplane disasters, and it has everything already categorized and laid out right there.
Well, it's not written by experts on sabotage like us, however. Now, so, okay, Jerry Litton died, Danforth became the senator from Missouri, and what are some of the things that Danforth did? Well, in 91, he promoted a incompetent assistant of his who worked in his office named Clarence Thomas, who other blacks called an Uncle Tom, to be on the U.S. Supreme Court. Do we all remember what happened in 91, the big commotion regarding that situation? Clarence Thomas had been a federal appeals judge in the District of Columbia, installed there by Danforth, and made a decision without disqualifying himself, saving Danforth $11 million. So here was an associate of Danforth's office sitting as a federal appeals judge, saved Danforth $11 million, being promoted for the U.S. Supreme Court, where he sits now. Okay?
All right.
In 93, a thing called the Danforth Report started, covering up the FBI criminal behavior at Waco. So this fellow Danforth, you know, look how he got installed.
Wow. Hey.
All right, now,
yes.
The next event that we could talk about as far as airplane sabotage was Ron Brown, head of the Commerce Department in the Clinton administration.
Yes.
His associates later confirmed that he felt within 2 weeks of what turned out to be his demise, he was facing indictment for a bribery and treason involving giving over certain secrets of the United States to the Red Chinese government.
Yes.
He told his associates, look, when they indict me, I'm not taking the fall. I'm going to bring Bill and Hillary Clinton because they should go to jail with me. He and a plane load of engineers were on the way to a series of meetings in Yugoslavia, and the plane in good weather was coming in for a landing in Croatia, and the radio beacon was sabotaged and directed them into a hill. Not a mountain, but a hill high enough to smash the plane up. Okay?
Yes.
He and a flight attendant survived. Later x-rays made of his body by certain officials of the government who spoke out about it and lost their jobs as a result, their x-rays showed that he was shot through the top of his head, a bullet. The flight attendant miraculously walked away from the plane unscarred. But they wanted her to go to the hospital to be checked out anyway. And somebody taking her from the plane, from the crash plane, where she survived and walked away, into a vehicle to the hospital. At the other end, they brought a dead body with their arteries all slashed.
Oh, my God.
Okay? Two of the airport people believed to be involved in the moving of the radio beacon were found dead, and the authorities says they both killed themselves. The U.S. military did not investigate. So there's strong reason to believe that there was sabotage. That was April 1996.
Okay.
The next event that I'd like to talk about is the murder of John F. Kennedy Jr. He was a skilled pilot, had many hours of flight training. Maybe people have forgotten, you know. He was the editor of George Magazine, a sort of political entertainment magazine. Do we all remember that magazine? Maybe some people don't remember.
Yeah.
He was fighting with the publisher, with the owners of the magazine, because they wanted to stop circulation of the magazine in December 99. Now, he had quite a way of twisting their arm. He was not the owner, he was only the editor. Who were the owners of George Magazine? Pachette, a French company, Paris. And who is among the largest stockholders of Pachette? Saddam Hussein.
What?
How does that grab you?
Wow.
Who did investigation of that? An investigation group in New York called Jules Cole and Associates, whose findings in 91 were printed in the Wall Street Journal. I know some people... See, we're good at putting various details together.
Absolutely.
You do not succeed in getting a judge indicted for bribery and thrown away by the establishment with foolishness, philosophy, or pie in the sky. We're technicians of details, and sometimes when we go on some of these radio shows, we get so detailed that some people get floored. They can't follow the details. And, of course, the job of a moderator like you, Evan, is to jump in and say, wait a minute, explain something. Because you get highly technical.
Yes, yes.
We're detailed people. We've got over a million paper records, files, court files, secret notebooks, audio, videotapes. I've been doing a non-commercial TV show in Chicago every week for 12 years. You'd be surprised some of the outspoken people we've had on our program. Public access cable TV. We've got a very big viewership. I have been the head of this group going on 40 years. I don't want to brag or anything, but you have to presume that we most likely know what the devil we're doing. We most likely.
So let's continue with John F. Kennedy Jr.
Yeah, okay. Also, he was planning a natural thing. He obviously wanted to get to the bottom of who all, high up in the U.S. government, the CIA, was involved in murdering his father and blaming it on a lone assassin. Who murdered his uncle, Robert F. Kennedy, and blamed that on a lone assassin. Who tried to kill his uncle, Teddy, who had survived four plane crashes. By the way, Teddy was supposed to be on Wellstone's plane. He changed his mind at the last minute. They were planning to kill two senators, not just one. Okay?
Yes.
But what was the biggest secret that Kennedy Jr. had? And he made a fatal mistake.
What was that?
He was going to announce in August of 99 that, like his father, he was going to run for president.
Not senator? He was going to run for president?
I know what you're getting at. There was a phony story in Newsweek that he was going to run for senator of New York against Hillary Clinton. That's a phony story. He was going to run for president. He made a mistake. He discussed it with some of the Gore campaign people, and the story leaked out. And the odd thing is, the small plane that he liked to fly around with, of which he had a lot of flight skill with it, you understand?
Yes.
Was parked at an airport in New Jersey, the same place, now you may not see a relevance, but I do, where Mary Jo Kopechne came from.
Oh.
You remember that incident at Chappaquiddick with Teddy Kennedy?
Yes.
That one of the women that did election bookkeeping work for the Kennedy family died in a car that fell off of a wooden bridge?
Right.
Mary Jo Kopechne. Hey, but get this. Just before that date, when Kennedy died, his plane, which was not secure, there was no security, was parked at a small airport in New Jersey. George W. Bush happened to stop by right there. Isn't that odd?
There was a gentleman who was linking Bush Jr. to the JFK Jr.'s death and saying that during the Iowa caucuses, that Bush just disappeared and nobody knew where he went for around 3 days.
Yeah, okay, but now, so the point is, the main thing is that Junior, Kennedy Jr., was really one of the most charming members of the Kennedy family, and so far as any of us could find out, didn't have any scandals connected with him, as some of the other Kennedys did.
Mm-hmm.
So he would have swept the field. Mm-hmm. He was going to announce in August. He didn't live that long. And he was just a short amount younger than his father when his father ran for president in 1960. But here, I've written a story called Two Fridays in 99. On July 9th of 99, Al Gore, at the time vice president, flying in Air Force 2, was approaching over Chicago. And by the strangest circumstance, three other commercial planes were steered right into the airspace to crash into Air Force 2 and kill Gore. Right over the center of the Democrat Party, the Daley family, Chicago. Does it come as a surprise that Chicago is the center of the Democrats?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
His pilot of Air Force 2 was so aggravated when he landed the plane that he wanted to punch somebody out. Now, the Sun-Times was the only paper in the United States that wrote of the strange circumstances. They said two airplanes were somehow vectored into the same airspace. Hey, one plane by accident could be. Two planes? I interviewed the people working on the story. It was three planes. That has got to be sabotage. You vector three planes into the same airspace as Gore's plane? And it was covered up. The Sun-Times, July 14, 99, is the only one that ran any details about it and told how the pilot of Air Force 2 wanted to, you know, punch out somebody in air traffic control. The following Tuesday, after the attempt to kill Gore, the former head of the FAA, Admiral Engen, an expert on air traffic control, died, was murdered. His glider, he liked to fly around in gliders, and his glider mysteriously disintegrated in the air. And what happened the Friday after the attempt on Gore? That was July 16th. 99. And it was that night that they murdered John F. Kennedy Jr. Now, the FBI had an elite group covering up the situation. They dredged up Jr.'s airplane near Massachusetts, covered it with a tarpaulin and allowed nobody to photograph it, and said that the bodies therein were going to be cremated and so on. They weren't cremated. They wrote a report about it, and the report was not to be declassified for 30 years. We have the report. We put the details of it on it was posted on RENS.com, a very popular website, RENSE.com.
Do you have it posted on your website, though?
Oh, yeah, it's on my website, too.
What's it titled?
What Happened to America's Golden Boy?
Okay.
The four-part series, and part four is the details of the FBI document.
Okay, very good.
They had determined from explosive analysis in the laboratory that there had been a bomb, an explosive device, with a barometric device. It's a barometric means that when the plane went down to a certain altitude, the thing blew up in the luggage compartment. We didn't wait 30 days. We didn't even wait. We certainly didn't wait 30 years. We didn't even wait 30 days. And we got a copy of their report. We posted it on our website and on RENS.com. And guess what happened?
What?
They tried to stop for 5 days our email posting. We sent it again and again and again to be posted. It didn't go through. The email just was blocked. And in an event that we feel is related, suddenly the FBI headquarters in Washington, it's called the J. Edgar Hoover Building, terrorists, they didn't specify who, are threatening our headquarters, and so we cannot have any more public tours of our building. And that announcement, stopping the public tours, was right after we somehow grabbed their secret report.
How do you link those two? Why?
Well, it was sort of a reaction.
Okay.
There was their way of saying, if you... Evan, I've never gotten around to ask the FBI for my Freedom of Information file.
Oh, my God.
They would come with a truck so big to my house. There it is. 500,000 pages. Unload it. I said, I'm in a wheelchair. How could I unload? Well, you asked for your file. Here it is. Unload the truck.
Hey, tell me this. Did you find that there were four people in JFK's flight or three?
Well, you're getting into a complication. As shown in the FBI report, he recovered a fetus. He had a male fetus. That is, his wife was pregnant. Now, they said in their secret report that it was a third trimester, but people that knew John F. Kennedy Jr.'s wife said that she wasn't pregnant that far. And maybe they threw that into the thing, just, you know.
But was his flight instructor with him?
No, he was not. And he refused to discuss anything thereafter. There's an awful lot of details that we could say about that, but before we run out of time, let me get further down the list. The next item I want to talk about is October 16, 2000. The last presidential debate was supposed to be in St. Louis. Albert Gore Jr. and George W. Bush. Mel Carnahan was the governor running for U.S. Senator against John
Ashcroft, yes.
Who had been the governor before Carnahan was the governor of Missouri. Carnahan had compiled documents that he was carrying the night before the debate on the way to St. Louis to turn them over to Gore for the purpose of, in the live televised debates, for Gore to confront and destroy the credibility of George W. Bush.
What were the documents about?
Dope business, criminality. We're working on a story about what were in those documents, but the point is, Carnahan's plane fell out of the sky, just like John F. Kennedy's plane. It just fell out of the sky. The FBI, now his plane fell into a heavily wooded, swamp-like area. I get this. The FBI arrived ahead of everybody else. Isn't that odd? They got there before the local police. Now, what happened is we interviewed some of the local investigators who found out what the FBI knew, that the plane had been sabotaged. Now, you see, some people do not understand much about our background. They haven't got patience to read the 150 stories on our website. We have a background of our work on our website. Where are your sources and documents, Mrs. Coney? We have a policy going back 40 years that we do not usually mention witnesses and sources. Now, why is that? Because there is a fascist element in the government. They're not about to protect witnesses. And people can lose their jobs or their life.
Yeah.
I don't want to find out tomorrow that one of our sources that I were to discuss now on your program was to fall off a building tomorrow, or his body floating in the canal tomorrow, or his airplane was to mysteriously blow up. One of the leading critics against Clinton, do you recall what happened? Senator Imhoff of Oklahoma.
Yes.
The propeller fell off of his plane. People in aviation said, this is impossible. The propeller fell off?
I don't remember that. Was that another
crash?
Oh,
that was in the media, yeah. And I think a reporter is the one that found the propeller laying on a highway. Because that's even more odd. No, the senator didn't die. He was a small plane, and he was able to glide it to a landing, minus the propeller. I tell you, it's the strangest thing I ever heard of.
I heard under Clinton.
So in other words, the bottom line is, yes, we protect witnesses.
Of course.
Now, that has made a great jeopardy for me as the head of the group. Me as the head of the group, my job is to confront as directly as we can those that we target for accusations of bribery. And what has happened to me in 40 years, wheelchair and all, I have been grabbed by high-level judges through their police and clapped in jail, not because I'm a criminal, for contempt of court. Why? They insisted that we divulge our sources and witnesses and our methods of investigation. And when I refused, it put me in jail. There is this to say, every judge that did that to me in 40 years later himself went to jail, and several of them died right after getting out of jail. So was I vindicated? I suppose I was. Okay, now, so you got the John F. Kennedy Jr. thing, you got the Carnahan thing, and now as time permits, how much time do we have, so I'll know how many details I want to put in here.
Well, let me just remind folks, hi, you're tuned to Radio Alchemy, okay? I'm your host, Evan. On the line, Sherman Skolnick. We are talking about the secret history of airplane sabotage, and you can see that at skolnicksreport.com. That's S-K-O-L-N-I-C-K-S. Report.com. We have around 10 minutes.
Okay, let me get into the Wellstone thing.
Yes.
Now, the Wellstone thing is one of the simpler instances of sabotage. The sabotage of the Watergate plane, as shown by their own documents, was sabotage in the electric bus, the bus bar, and also turning off the radio beacon. In the Wellstone thing, they simply tampered intentionally with the radio beacon, and as he approached the runway, he had two skilled pilots. Usually that charter plane had only one, but since the plane was scheduled to have two U.S. senators, Wellstone and Teddy Kennedy, and of course Teddy sidestepped the thing at the last minute,
mm-hmm.
They had two skilled pilots. And the weather wasn't that bad, not at the lower altitude as they were approaching. And they ended up in a heavily wooded area. Why? The radio beacon intentionally misdirected them, like they did with Ron Brown's plane, like they did with the Watergate plane. They misdirected him.
But why weren't there visual cues? I mean, he crashed in a heavily wooded area. Why wouldn't the pilots see that where they're being steered to, there's no runway there? They crashed short of the runway.
Well, the other possibility, yes, I hear what you're saying. Remember, information to compile about air sabotage is not a simple matter that a few days or a few weeks after the event you could have all the details. There are situations about what happened to Kennedy Jr.'s plane and the Wellstone plane and the Carnahan's plane that leads one to believe that they used an EMP pulse, which is a high-tech thing, a sort of a laser beam from the ground that fries out the electronics of the plane, and he loses control of the plane.
Yeah, everything gets whacked. All their measuring devices just get whacked.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, a credible witness mentioned on Wrens.com saw a flash near the tail of the Wellstone plane just before it got out of control and fell out of the sky. So that would support the idea of overkill. Radio beacon tampered with. And EMP.
Now the flash,
electromagnetic pulse.
Right. So the flash in the tail section is a reaction to the EMP.
Well.
Or is it
you wreck the tail mechanism and the plane can't maneuver anymore? Goes off to one side and crashes.
Wow.
So those two things, I think, in some of these instances. Now, in the Dorothy Hunt plane crashes, we had all their files and records, 1,300 pages of documents and pictures. We know that there was overkill. In the Dorothy Hunt crash, we spent a lot of time investigating it, and there was overkill. There was a lot more than just the radio beacon situation.
If we could talk a little bit, because you did get into detail about some of the tools that are necessary for pilots to safely maneuver plane crashes, and one of them is this electric bus bar. What is that electric bus bar?
That is a part of the electrical system of the plane.
And do you know what it controls?
It controls everything.
Oh, so, okay, so it's a distro unit. It distributes power and communication throughout the plane.
In the Dorothy Hunt plane, from all the pictures and documents we had pictures of the key instruments of the plane being fried out from the inside.
Okay.
Not from the small fire on the plane,
yes,
but that they were fried out from the inside, which meant sabotage. The flight recorder was jammed.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing. They usually steal the flight recorder or jam it. In the Wellstone plane, the first safety inspectors on the scene says, we got the flight recorder, we're going to analyze it. Later, someone said to the press up there in St. Paul and in Minneapolis, I don't know, we don't know where the flight recorder is. All of a sudden, it disappeared. Usually, the cover-up starts afterwards. Now, in the John F. Kennedy Jr. thing, the media did a terrible, terrible cover-up. There was no communication with John F. Kennedy Jr.'s plane and the ground.
Mm-hmm.
A blatant lie.
Mm-hmm.
The major TV station in Boston, all that Saturday, after the Friday night crash where the Kennedy Jr.'s plane fell out of the sky, televised an interview with a aviation, with a government official stating that he had been communicating with the tower and he was coming in for a landing. How do I know? We have got a copy of the videotape of that television station.
Yes.
Do you see the point?
Mm-hmm.
So Ted Koppel show and all the rest of these liars, they could say what they want. They lied.
Mm-hmm.
They lied.
Tell us about the altimeter. That was also sabotaged?
Oh, yeah, the altimeter. On the Watergate plane,
the Watergate
you have to read our four-part series.
Well,
there was overkill there.
Oh, the
Dorothy Hunt survived, and they croaked her on the ground together with some of the other Watergate people. In her case, the suitcase with the $2 million in valuables, the FBI allowed a mafia-based baggage gang that steals airport baggage to steal her baggage from the plane crash site and tried to market it to the underworld because you could blackmail Nixon with it. How do I know? We've got an FBI document about it, and something came up related to that when they caught the baggage gang on another charge. I was there at the trial. Do I know what I'm talking about? You'd have to assume I do.
Sherman, we have around 3 minutes left, and you wanted to give some information.
Yeah, let me. Now, obviously what I've discussed here is unfortunately incomplete. There's so many other details. For a heavy packet of our printer stories and some of the other things that our group has come up with that are current events, send $5 and a stamped, self-addressed, business-size envelope with three stamps on it to Sherman Skolnick, Skolnick, 9800 South Oglesby Avenue, Oglesby. Chicago, Illinois, 60617. Repeat. Heavy packet of our printed stories on some of our other situations. Send $5 in a stamped, self-addressed, business-size envelope with three stamps on it to Sherman Skolnick, 9800 South Oglesby, Chicago, Illinois, 60617. Some of the things we discussed about today are in, by the way, our current literature that we're just coming out with. mention two other details of how to contact us before we run out of time here. If you didn't write down our name and address, we have a whole group of phones so you don't get a busy signal. It is not an expensive call, and it plays a recorded message updating our work, and at the tail end it tells you how to get our literature and our website address. And that number in Chicago is 773-731-1100. 773-731-1100. That's not an expensive call. And again, for a more complete understanding of what we were talking about here, our website, which has got a four-part series, The Secret History of Airplane Sabotage. You've got to scroll all the way down our website to come across it. Some reporters miss it because they only go part way down. And that's www.skolniksreport.com. And that's after my name. SKOLNICKSREPORT.com. I hope that those that hear this program commend this facility and Eben Ray for putting on this show. Let's face it, there are places in America where this type of discussion is simply censored and not allowed. And one such place is my hometown of Chicago. Other than our non-commercial public access cable TV show, this type of thing is not allowed to be discussed on the air in Chicago and in a few other places, Minneapolis, New York, Miami, and so on.
Well, Sherman, thank you so much, as always, for your incredible research and dedication to getting out the truth and to also protecting those that entrust you with this kind of information, because we go to regular news sources and they always have unstated sources say, and all that is propaganda coming out. So for the idea of truth and saving these people and giving them the opportunity to pass on information needed for the public, thank you for the way that you handle your research and for continuing to bring out the truth, especially in looking at the world and the way it's going.
You're one of the most knowledgeable moderators, and I commend you. Thanks, everybody, for listening.